Hi, my name is Damien Brady, and today I'm going to be talking to you about building custom tasks for the new Team Foundation build system. The first question you might ask is, why is there a new Team Foundation build system? And I think the answer can really be summed up in this GIF. If you've ever worked with the Team Foundation build system before, you'd know that it's quite difficult to modify the piles of XAML that exist for that process. What these process templates really are is a way to try and get every possible build process out in one hit, and really all you need is a collection of tasks that run after one after another. So that's why there's a new system that encompasses this new model a bit better. If you have a look at Chris Patterson's talk from Build in 2015, you'll see he talks about four guiding principles. He talks about not building a new build or automation DSL because there are plenty that exist already. He talks about not supporting only Windows, so supporting other platforms natively. He talks about intentional extensibility and then not hiding your log. What we're going to focus on today is the intentional extensibility. The idea behind this is that to build your own custom tasks and to change the build process, it shouldn't be a horrible process that involves finding where in that XAML you need to slot your own task, building new assemblies that comply to a particular way of writing code. You should be able to build your own task very easily and very quickly, and it should slot in as easily as any of the native tasks. By way of a bit more background, I want to talk about the old versus the new architecture for the build system. If you ever worked with the old build system, you'll know that you're probably talking about a TFS server that talks to a build controller and that talks to a build agent. But really what's happening is you might have a number of collections. You might have a default collection, one for internal projects, maybe one for client projects as well. The build controllers actually talk about those collections, so they're connected to collections rather than the TFS server. And what that means in practice is if you have more than one collection, you're going to need more than one build controller. Similarly, you're going to need more than one build agent. So you end up duplicating or triplicating, in this case, all of that effort, where really all you really need, the bit that does the work, is the build agent, and you could probably suffice with just one of those, or a couple if you're building other types of projects. If you contrast that with the new architecture, what we see here is a TFS server, or Visual Studio Online, and a series of different agents. Now the build agent you can install on your own machine, your own infrastructure, and it can either run from the command line or run as a service. And Microsoft also supplies a hosted build agent as well that can build .NET applications and a few other things. Finally, you can install build agents on OS X machines as well for building iOS apps. You pull these agents into agent pools, and here I've got them pulled into different types of build. So .NET applications will be built by the blue pool here, and OS X applications or iOS applications will be built by the orange pool. What you could do in practice as well is group these into pools by different groups of developers. So your internal collection might have a pool of agents, your client collection might have a pool of agents, and so on. Now, when you actually want to do a build, you choose a pool, and that build will be picked up by an agent that has the correct capabilities for building that project. Similarly, if you build an iOS application and point it at that pool, it'll pick up that agent. So just to recap how that works. The Team Foundation server, when you trigger a build, it sends a series of tasks to that agent, and the agent will own that build from start to finish. The agent itself is chosen from a pool that you supply, and the agent that's chosen is based on capabilities. So if you have a step in your build process that requires building an iOS application, then the agent will be chosen based on a capability of being able to build that iOS application. The agent, when it runs, it'll set environment variables with build and server information so that you can retrieve that information in that process. The agent uses modules to perform those tasks, and obviously those modules will have access to those environment variables so they can do their work. And finally, the agent sends logs back to TFS, which get displayed in real time in the browser so that you can see what's happening. It's a much simpler model and one that's much easier to extend if you write your own modules. So let's have a look at writing our own modules. So you remember I talked about intentional extensibility being one of the guiding principles of this new build system. With that in mind, Microsoft has made available all of the agent tasks that you get out of the box available on GitHub. So if you go to the GitHub Microsoft VSO agent tasks repository and then have a look at tasks, you'll see the list of everything that's made available out of the box. If you have a look at some of these, let's have a look at, for example, the MS build task. You'll see that there's a task.json, a PowerShell script here that is used, an icon, as well as some localization stuff. Now, rather than show you Microsoft's ones, I'm going to show you one that we wrote as part of Octopus Deploy to help create a release as part of your build process. So let's go over to Visual Studio Code and have a look at this task.json. Now, there's a few different things here, but we're going to just go through them from the top. There's some basic stuff like an ID that you can give, a name, friendly names, descriptions, and so on, and a category, which we'll have a look at when we actually add the task. Here we also have visibility, and you'll notice that I've got build and release in there. Now, the interesting thing about these build tasks is they are also available as release tasks, or they will be when Microsoft gets to the release management in the web that they have in the pipeline. These are built on exactly the same technology. And what that means is if you have a task that you've built that can be part of your build process, it can also be part of your release process. Now, obviously for Octopus Deploy, we wanted to make that part of the release process when that lights up. So this will be an available task that you can add to your release. Now we have our author, we have some versions that you can increment as you go. We have a minimum agent version, so your agent process that runs either hosted or on-premises. We can define that we need it to be at least 1.82 to run, just in case there's some new functionality that we're making use of. Now we get to the parts that define the fields the user will fill in when they add your task to their process. We have a couple of additional groups here. We have a release notes section and an additional options section, which we'll see in a sec. And here are our inputs. So the first one, I'm not going to go into in too much detail, but there's a connected service. So Visual Studio Online and soon TFS will allow you to natively connect to another external third party, and you can use that third party as part of your build process and your release process without having to do things like provide usernames and passwords each time. It'll allow you to connect kind of at a server level. So in this case, we're going to use the generic connected service, and we're going to assume that somebody's connected to an Octopus Deploy server, and we'll show you that soon. We need a project name for Octopus, so the project that we're going to deploy, and then a couple of Boolean flags to decide what's going to go in our Octopus Deploy release notes, whether we're just going to include change set comments or work item release notes. Now you'll notice here we're using our group name for the release notes section, a release notes section. So this is an expandable area that we'll be able to get access to when we're filling out these fields. Finally here, we've got a couple of other additional sections. So a deploy to argument, which will allow us to, once we've created a release, deploy it to a particular Octopus environment, and also any additional arguments that we can pass to the octo.exe. Now that brings up an interesting point. Where are we going to get this octo.exe? Well, interestingly, we can just package this up in our custom build process. So you can see the power that's made available to you here. If you have something that needs to do some work that requires some code, then you can write your own command line program here and include it as part of that build task. When the agent picks up that task, it will work out whether it already has this Create Octopus Release module. And if it doesn't, it'll pull it down from the server, including all the resources, so our octo.exe, and it will be able to use that as part of this build process task. So let's have a look at the final couple of bits in the manifest that I've got. We have our instance name format, and that's really just a default name that we give to this task when we add it to our process. In our case, we're just using create Octopus release and then the project name that they've decided. And finally, we tell the build process or the build agent exactly how to execute our process. In most cases for Windows, you'll probably just use PowerShell. And in this case, we're just giving us this PS, giving it this PS1 file to execute. We don't have to define any different argument formats, and our working directory is the current directory that we're working in. Those are the defaults there. So let's have a look at our create process PS1 script. So right at the top here, we've got our parameters that we're passing to that script. And what we'll get passed in is the matching field names. So we had a connected service name, a project name, change set release comments, and so on. These will get passed in as string arguments, but we can convert them as we go. We can define whether they're mandatory or not as well. I'm just going to skip down here because we've defined a lot of functions. So I'm going to skip down to where the execution actually starts. And we'll run through a few of these things here. The first thing we're doing here is getting our connection to Octopus server, to Octopus deploy. So we're using this get service endpoint commandlet that's made available to us by the agent. We're using our connected service name that was passed in. And then based on that, we can get credentials and things like that that are attached. So we've got a function here which will use that connected service and then get the credentials out and also the URL, so we know how to talk to Octopus. We want to get the details of what release notes are going to go into Octopus deploy. So again, if these are set, we're going to convert them to Booleans first. If they're set, we're going to use this get service endpoint function again. But this time we're going to pass in this system VSS connection object or string. And what that's going to give us is what's essentially a connection to the Visual Studio Online or Team Foundation server system that we're getting our build triggered from. Now there's a lot of information that comes back in this, but what we really care about is the credentials so that we can call the REST API to pull out things like change set comments or related tasks and so on, work items. I'll come back to that because that's fairly important, but that's the function that does it. And then we're going to turn those release notes once we get them into a parameter that we can pass to octo.exe. If we've asked to deploy to a particular environment, we'll set that argument. We'll find our octo.exe file, and then we'll use invoke tool to run that octo.exe file passing in these arguments. So the first one, obviously, create release. We give it the project name, the server, and so on. And then finally, we're finished. So let's come back to this get linked release notes where we're passing in our Visual Studio Online or TFS connection. So we'll come back up to where that's defined. And we can see the first thing we're doing here is getting a personal access token. Now what this ultimately is it's basically an OAuth bearer token that we can use to access Visual Studio Online or TFS. In that, when we actually do our web request here, we're adding that as our bearer token. Now the lifetime of this token is basically, it should last for about as long as your build process takes or your build task takes, but it's really useful for being able to hit the Visual Studio Online or TFS server to get information that you need. So that's what we're using it for. The other thing which you might notice here is these environment variables. Now we're constructing this URI based on these environment variables that you'll remember I said get set by the agent before this runs. Now how do you know what these environment variables are? Once again, in GitHub, if we go to docs, authoring, and then variables, you can see fairly clearly that we have all of these different environment variables that we'll get access to. So again, we can have a look at these and work out what they are for the build and the Team Foundation server process and things like that. So let's jump back here. We're going to use the collection URI, our team project ID. We're going to hit the REST API here, passing in the build ID and slash changes, and that'll give us all the change sets that are related to this build. Again, we pass in our bearer token that we got from our Visual Studio endpoint, and we invoke our web request, convert it from JSON, so we get a nice object we can use, and then we go on and we do our parsing and so on. And that's really all there is to it. We have a lot of control over what we've got running here. We can package up other resources that we need, octo.exe in our case, also define an icon, a nice little icon that will appear. And then our Octopus create release process will get run, and that'll run as part of the build. So let's have a look at what's involved when you actually add this process to Visual Studio Online or TFS. The first thing you'll need to do is you'll need to upload this, obviously. Now, at time of recording, this task uploader is not actually available, but when we hit RTM for build, that will be something that you'll be able to get access to. And it's fairly simple. It's basically just an executable. You give it the URL for your TFS or Visual Studio Online account, and then you'll give it a path to the folder that contains all of our resources. So if I was uploading this, I'd add my Visual Studio Online account URL, and then I'd point at this Create Octopus Release folder. It would give me a credential prompt, so I'd need to log into Visual Studio Online, and then it would upload these tasks. Now, the ultimate aim is not to have a taskuploader.exe. Ultimately, there'll be a web-based interface for this, so you can add your project to a store and add your build task to a store and be able to make that available through extensions and things like that. All right, so let's have a look at what happens when somebody actually goes to add that to their project. Okay, so for this demo, we have a little Anagram Maker web app, and it does what you'd pretty much expect. You put in a word and click submit, and it'll go away and give you all of the anagrams for that particular word. Now, we already have a build for this. It will do a compilation, it'll run tests, it'll publish our symbols, and then it'll publish the build artifacts. We also have Octopack involved in this as well. So what that will do is it'll package everything up into a NuGet package and then push that to Octopus. So Octopus Deploy has that artifact available for releasing. If we look in Octopus, we can see that we have an Anagram Maker project, and it's already got some development releases and deployments that have happened. It's just got a single process step, which is to unpack that NuGet package and configure the IIS location as well to deploy it. All right, so let's have a look at our build process. The one thing we don't have here is the step that we've created the new task. So after we uploaded that, we can now add this build step, go to the deploy section, which was the category we put it in, and we can see we've got our Create Octopus Release custom step there. So let's add that, and we'll close. And if we go and have a look at the configuration, we can see we have a drop-down for the Octopus Deploy server, which is our third-party service that we've connected to, a project name, some checkboxes for whether to include change set comments and work items, and some additional options. You can see these are in those groups that we mentioned as well. So nicely laid out for us. Now, we don't actually have a third-party connection to Octopus, so let's just do that quickly. If we click on Manage, we can see we go to the Admin section, and we can add a new service connection. So the native ones that are supported are Azure and Chef, but we can also create a generic one, which is what we're using. So let's create a generic one called Octopus. We'll put in our URL for the server, preview.cloudapp.net, and then we've got Octopus Deploy running on port 8000. Username doesn't really matter because we're not using that, but we are using an API key. So I've created one already, and let's just put that one in there, and then we'll have our connection to Octopus. We can close this and come back here, refresh, and we should be able to choose our generic connection from that list. So there we go, we can connect to Octopus. We need a project name, which in this case is Anagram Maker. That's the name of the project in Octopus Deploy. And then we want to include our change set comments and our work item, linked work items as well. You can see the other examples or the help text that we put in as well is available in this UI. Finally, we want to deploy our release to our development environment. Now, I could do all of this as part of the push from Octopack by creating an automatic release creation step, as well as a lifecycle step that would automatically deploy to that environment. However, we wouldn't get the benefit of these change set comments or work items, so I'd prefer to do it this way and then do the deployment to our first environment as well. That could easily be done with a lifecycle though, because these are attached to our release rather than our deployment. Okay, so let's save that. And I want to queue a build, but just before I do that, we're going to queue a build on our private on-premises agent rather than the hosted one. I could use the hosted one, but you can see a lot more about what's happening if we use our on-premises one. So I have that running. It's just running as a console agent at the moment. And you can see over here, if we have a look in the tasks folder for that agent, we can see all of those tasks that we saw in GitHub. So all of the open source tasks are available, and those are things that the agent is able to use. What we don't see though is our Octopus create release task, the one that we created. So what will happen is when the release occurs, when this agent picks it up, it'll get to that create Octopus release step, realize it doesn't have the task, and it'll pull it down from TFS or from Visual Studio Online, and it'll dump it here in a versioned way and then use that for that step. So let's do that. We'll have a look at actually queuing a build. So let's queue one. We'll use our default queue rather than our hosted one. Click OK. And we can see one of if on the guiding principles that we saw, one of the key points was that you can see the log. So this log actually appears in real time from the agent that we get. So once that starts running, we can see everything that's happening. So this is exactly as if you were watching it run on a command line. So we can see it's getting the sources, it's doing a compilation, its Octopack is grabbing all of the files and packaging them up. So while that's going on, let's just jump over here and we can see that our build agent has started picking these things up. And we can also see we've got up to this Octopus create release and it's pulled down this task for us. If we have a look at that as well, it's versioned, which means that when we increase our version and upload a new version of it, then we'll end up with, you know, a brand new copy of it here, and all of our changes will work as well. So let's have a look. We're just publishing our artifacts. We haven't quite got up to that step, so it's pulled it down in preparation. And we're going to create our Octopus release. We can see all of our verbose stuff here, and that's succeeded. So let's jump over to Octopus Deploy, and we can see in our dashboard we've created a release, and it started deploying it to our development environment, which is exactly what we want. Now, when that finishes, I'm just going to jump over to our anagram maker, because that should have deployed a new version here with the styling applied to these items, the input box and the button. So when that spins back up again, there we go, we've got our changes. Now in Octopus as well, let's just drill into this release here, and we'll have a look at the release notes that get pulled in as well. And we should see that they have links to the items, the change set comments that have been related to this build. So these are the change sets that have happened since the last build, as well as any linked work items, which was our add some style work item here. Now these are deep links as well. So if we click on those, we can see they link all the way through to the change set itself, as well as to the work item. Similarly, if we have a look at the build over in TFS build, we can see that those associated changes are here as well. And that's all there is to it. You can see how much more powerful this new build system is than the previous one. We were able to build our own custom task and have that run as part of our build process. We could see that we could package pretty much anything we wanted along with that build task, and it would get uploaded to the agent, and the agent would use that as part of the build process, and so we could do pretty much whatever we wanted. I'd encourage you to have a look at building your own custom build tasks as well. Have a look at the ones that are available on GitHub that Microsoft has made available, as well as the Octopus Deploy one that we've made available. You should get some ideas from there, and I look forward to seeing what you come up with. Thanks for watching.